This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. District 5 is San Antonio's most compact district, and 93% of the residents there are low income. The West Side District is filled with history and pride and families who believe in the American dream. The San Antonio City Council got a shakeup in the most recent municipal elections, and District 5 City Council Representative Shirley Gonzalez was sent back to City Hall, earning nearly 66% of the vote. Now she has a stronger leadership role on council. Gonzalez chairs the newly developed Comprehensive Planning Committee. What questions and comments do you have for Councilmember Gonzalez? You can call in. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. You can email us at thesource@tpr.org. And Shirley Gonzalez, welcome back to The Source. It's
great to have you. Thank you so much for having me.
So I want to start off first by asking you about a mutual friend of ours, Jaime Martinez, and his passing.
So I got to be with Jaime a few days ago before his passing. I had gotten word from his family that he was in the hospital, and I went over as soon as I could. And I got to see him in his last days, and he did open his eyes. He seemed to recognize me. All the family was around. He was surrounded by his wife and his children and his grandchildren. And I felt very hopeful that he would come out of it again, as he has so many times. So I was very saddened to hear the news of his passing.
Jaime, a longtime civil rights and labor leader here in San Antonio, with his bullhorn frequently at events, challenging the status quo, fighting for the little guy.
Until the very last moment. So I practically, when I was there on his bedside, I was thinking, si se puede. And unfortunately, he did not make it, but he lived very strong up until the very last moment.
And he left an impression, made a difference in San Antonio. Jaime Martinez, he will be missed. And so, Shirley Gonzalez, you're here to join us to talk about your vision and where you want to move your district, District 5, and the city along the way as you step into a stronger leadership role on the city council. And we did open up our phone lines and our voicemail lines, and so we're going to hear a voicemail now from one of our listeners.
I would like to know if you have any plans for the area near Lackland Air Force Base that's in your district. We're hoping to get that area cleaned up because all the military families come to see the boys graduate from Lackland Air Base, and the area near Lackland is really in poor condition. So we're hoping that your section that's governed by you could, have something in the works to beautify that section.
Okay, thank you, caller, and Shirley.
So primarily that area around Northwest Military is in District 4, but I have 36th Street that leads into the port, which is now Port San Antonio. And so we've been working very closely with the port specifically for economic development, and that's regarding bringing more jobs to the area. Specifically for the corridors that I have around the port, we know that specifically, General McMullen is an area where we've had a lot of fatalities. It speaks to the Vision Zero initiative that I've worked on the last few years. So General McMullen is a site for some potential road improvements. We know that we need to slow down the traffic in that area. It was originally designed to be a street where they brought in heavy materials and traffic, and we know that mission has changed very significantly over the years. So we're hoping to slow down the traffic, bring in some Vision Zero initiatives, potentially some landscaping, and just beautify the area, because the area around there is a thriving middle-class, working-class community that deserves some improvement. We've been working with the park around Kennedy High School, the Kennedy Park, to get some money for the bond, which they got, and we've been working very closely with that neighborhood to do beautification projects and to do some slowing down of the traffic in their area.
So we know that Port San Antonio and these other areas, they're job generators. But we can create jobs, and people they seem not to mind driving infinite amount of miles to get to their jobs. So we have to come up with innovative ways to inspire people to put down roots near these areas as well, and say, let's if you're going to work here, why not live here?
And that's one of the big initiatives that I have for the district in these next 2 years, is to develop a very strong housing initiative and housing policy. And in the area specifically around the port, we have much more stable housing than we do in other parts of the district, but we know that there's a tremendous need for housing all over the city. And so the port is bringing in 12,000 jobs every day. They're mostly high-paying jobs, but the majority of people who work there tend to live in the Alamo Ranch area in the far west side. So having alternative housing options for people who want to live closer to where they work is one initiative that I have. It can be multifamily, it can be single family, and it can be also smaller scale development, which is an initiative that I have that we could hopefully bring all over the city, and working with developers to do much more smaller scale as opposed to the larger scale development we've seen so far.
Our phone lines are open. If you got a question for District 5 City Council member Shirley Gonzalez, the number is 210-614-8980. Daniela has called in. And Daniela, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I just have a question. I am a graduate student at UTSA downtown for social work. And I wanted to know if Councilwoman had any plans on helping with the relationship with UTSA, since it is District 5 downtown. I know that UTSA has talked about merging the community together more because it is in District 5, and I wanted to know if she had any plans for that. And I'll take the answer off the air.
Okay. Well, thank you, Daniela, for that call.
Thank you, Daniela, for asking that question, because I really am excited about the relationship that we have begun with UTSA. Under Dr. Reyes's leadership, he had a strong commitment to.
And he was the interim.
He was the interim after Dr. Romo resigned, came in and served as interim, and he had a very strong commitment to working with the community. And while UTSA's mission primarily has been for research over the years, the mission for the downtown campus was always to be more community-based. And so he started that initiative with a task force, and I was fortunate enough to serve on that task force. And since then, we've had a couple initiatives that we've been working on directly with students in the social work department, specifically around child abuse. And if the opportunity presents itself, perhaps we can talk a little bit more about that child abuse initiative. But we're also working with them on some affordable housing initiatives, specifically to work with families that have had issues with titles and wills and estates. We've been working with UTSA. We've also been working with them on some more urban planning that's been going on in the area. So we have started to build a really great relationship. We know that UTSA is one of the anchors in our district and really for the whole city. So having a better relationship with all the departments, specifically for architecture, urban planning, and social work, which are the schools that are in the downtown campus, reaching out to the different organizations and nonprofits that are already there doing the work, and using their skill set to build on some of the initiatives that we have, specifically that I've been working on with child abuse and housing. So we look forward to continuing that relationship. We know that UTSA has a strong desire to bring more students to the downtown campus. So having sufficient housing for students and options for people for retail is another thing that we can continue to build on to bring students to the downtown.
But the downtown campus for UTSA is basically they're landlocked. There's really not a whole lot more growth for them to take on unless they can manage a swap, which they've been talking about for a long time doing with the San Antonio to try to get some of the municipally owned property that's down at the border.
While there may not be opportunities for physical expansion at this point, and of course there is a grand vision for the downtown and how that might develop, but there's no funding immediately addressed to that. So while we may not be able to do a lot more physical buildings, we still have lots of opportunity for programming. So that doesn't necessarily require more space. Many of the programming is actually off campus and off site in within the neighborhood. So still lots of opportunities for that, and I'm looking forward to working with them on expanding some of that programming.
Avia is purchased some property in that area as well for redevelopment, so there are some things happening in that Cattleman Square area right around downtown UTSA that seem very exciting. But also at the same time, we still have the jail right there and Haven for Hope, and people wonder what's going to happen. Can all these things coexist?
And they absolutely can coexist. They've seen it in cities all around the country. Even Houston has a university campus right next to its jail in the downtown. And what really brought that downtown community together and thriving was a rail line that went right in through the middle of the jail and
which
the
we
downtown
have too.
Campus. So we have great potential there. The Scobie building, which has changed hands a number of times, now back in VIA's hands, has also great potential. We know that there is a need for transit-oriented development, and we have the space available to really build on that. We've been working with some nonprofits in the area, specifically LISC, who has come into the area that wants to do transit-oriented development. So the potential is there, and the opportunity is there, and I believe that we're really on the verge of it. It's just a matter of time that all those pieces come together, and we can see the great expansion.
Okay, let's get Javier on the conversation here. He's called in. And Javier, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Welcome. Hey, Ms. Gonzalez, I think I came in on the butt end of some of your answer. I'm an ex-alumni from UTSA. I also wanted to know... They send us the Sombrillas, a brochure from the alumni, the UTSA alumni, and I've seen what the downtown campus is supposed to look like. It's beautiful. I mean, we need to, you know, start building over there, stop building on the main campus and start expanding on the downtown campus. The potential is not being realized, ma'am. I'll take your answer off the air.
Javier, thank you for the call. Shirley Gonzalez.
And I'll agree with you there. The potential is not being realized. We know that we have sufficient government buildings there to expand on that campus. It would take some state funding in particular. We know that recently the legislature cut funding for many of our universities. So we are hopeful and optimistic that we can continue to offer services there. The potential for expanded physical buildings, I think, is limited. While we have the space, we don't have necessarily have the funding to do that. So we hope and, well, we expect and are already working on programming that can help stabilize the entire community surrounding the university, which we know will ultimately bring more students there and more life to the downtown, to the near west side downtown area.
It helps to have a vibrant university with UTSA, also Our Lady of the Lake, right there on the west side in your district, providing higher education opportunities to many of your residents.
And it's an obvious connection. While my district, District 5, has two universities, we have St. Mary's just on the border, and we have a community college at St. Philip's that's doing a wonderful vocational work there that leads to immediate job creation through that program. We still have the lowest college attainment rate anywhere in the city. Less than 3% of my constituents have a college degree. So making sure that the universities are outreaching to the community and where they live is really key to the success of the whole area. So certainly we have the brain power.
We have the infrastructure.
We have that, and it's all connected through a street network. It's connected through trails. It's connected through public transit. We have already in District 5, and I've said this many times, I believe it wholeheartedly, the ideal community. We have universities, we have parks, we have libraries, we have great constituents, we have connectivity, we have trails, we have
history.
And great history and great culture and great food. And so we have everything we need to be a thriving, vibrant community. We need all of us to get together and to merge and really have that vision, which I believe that I do have that vision, so that we are as strong and as successful as we could be.
So what's step number one to get there?
Well, I'll tell you, step number one, I'll tell you what some of my priorities are, which I believe will help to give us a bit more equity. Because one of the problems that we've seen over the years is that while we have all the things that I've mentioned, they have not been fully realized to their full potential in many ways because of equity. So one of the programs that I've been working on is a street maintenance and preservation program. Over the last many, many years, our street maintenance program has been divided by rough proportionality, meaning all the districts get about the same amount of money for street preservation. My proposal, which took about a year and a half of work, was I worked through TCI and through our audit department just to confirm some of the data. And we know that five districts in the city are below an average PCI score of 70, which is our street maintenance program.
So let me just say this. So the city had a policy of just dividing up equal shares of the money that would go for street maintenance. And but there were some districts, older districts in San Antonio, that had a history of neglect, and you're still trying to catch up. And because of this policy of equal shares, that if we keep doing this, you're never going to catch up.
That's right. And if we continued on the same policy, we would likely never catch up. So a redirection of some funding that would allow the districts that had the poorest street network, the poor street preservation maintenance score, to be equal to the rest of the city is one of the proposals that I've been working on, because one of the things that will help equalize us in many ways is simply funding. And so having that rough proportionality change to a more need-based approach brings five of the council districts, 1, 3, 5, 10, and 2, up to a 70 PCI.
Shirley Gonzalez is with us this afternoon here on The Source. Our phone lines are open. We want to hear your calls and questions. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The conversation continues after this quick break. Stay tuned. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. How will District 5 incumbent City Council member Shirley Gonzalez use her experience and new responsibilities to help her district and move the city forward? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 614-8980. If you got a question or a comment for Shirley Gonzalez, and let's go to the phone lines with Mike Lowe. Mike, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, thanks so much, Shirley. Mike Lowe here. I just wanted to ask, in regards to your role as Councilwoman for District 5 and moving the city forward, we are seeking to have the Travis Park Confederate Monument removed. And I just wanted to get your thoughts about that action and as it relates to the inclusivity for, again, moving the city forward.
All right, Michael, thank you for the call. And Shirley Gonzalez?
Well, Mike, thank you for the question. So I am strongly supportive of moving the statue, relocating potentially to museum that's been proposed. I'm really grateful that this really came to our attention. I've lived in San Antonio my whole life. I frequent our parks, and I never even knew about the statue until people started talking about it. And this is why I think it's so critical that we have these conversations, because once we bring it to our attention and we recognize it as a symbol of discrimination and of oppression for so many years, then we can start to have real conversations about how we can improve. So I'm very open and looking forward to a more community-based discussion about what we do and what we put in its place and what feels inclusive and what feels supportive of the neighborhoods. So I think part of the problem that we've had in San Antonio as Latinos and as African Americans is that we've sort of been denied our cultural histories. And so that's why people like Jaime Martinez were so significant for us. And movements like this one, where we're starting to highlight these problems, are important for us at every level. So I look forward to a continued dialogue and what we do with the statue and relocating it, what comes in its place.
So remove and replace. And replace with what?
I think that would be open to the community's, a community dialogue. I don't have a recommendation at this point. But something that's inclusive and something that the community would feel proud of, something that's more reflective of this diverse city that we live in. And I would look forward to the community's input.
Should there be some emphasis on trying to tell a more complete part of the story about San Antonio during slavery and the Civil War?
And there absolutely should. And I was mentioning to you as we were chatting, I was in Denver, Colorado over the weekend, and was looking at some history of just plaques that they had in a national park that we were in, and they talked about how the Native Americans departed from the area and how it was settled by, you know, another group. And I thought, isn't that interesting? That's how they presented it, as if the Native Americans quietly made their way out of the land and they just departed. And so having a complete story about what actually happened in that region is really critical. And I think this is what we've been denied as Mexican Americans and as Latinos and African Americans. We haven't been told our story, and suddenly we just departed. And so I think it's really important that we have an open dialogue about what happened and have a real history.
Okay, we got some emails. I'm going to get to the emails, but first, Antonio's been on the line for a while, so let's get him on the air. And Antonio, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Well, thank you. My question is regarding the BRAC closures and then the findings of all the contamination of the immediate area and a plume that back then was a 10-mile radius. I don't know what it is now. I know it's increased because of the rains. And I'm asking this because you were talking about housing development, and it's going to be built over the same contaminated area because it was not cleaned up sufficiently. We had protest marches down from Kennedy High School, where I am an alumni of Kennedy High School, and we went into Kelly, and we had meetings back then, town hall meetings there at Kennedy High School, discussing this issue of the contamination of all the cancers and of also the cluster of Lou Gehrig's disease of the residents of that area. So when you talk about development and housing, being responsible and addressing the contamination first before developing and creating more housing, which would, again, put more people exposed to that contamination.
Well, thank you, Antonio, for the question. So the city now has about $400,000 dedicated for brownfield, and that means that we have funding available for cleanup in certain areas before any housing or development occurs in that area. So I think an expansion of that program where we are fully cleaning areas that show contamination would be an option that I would like to see us pursue. We know that all of the area has to be cleaned before any housing development goes in there. It's primarily done by the developers, but it could be greatly subsidized by the city as well. And that's why we have that brownfield program of about $400,000. So expanding that program. So we're looking for more grant funding and absolutely making sure that any area is contaminated would be the policy of the city. And I would fully support any development, whether it's housing or commercial development. It has to be cleaned to a certain standard.
An email from Valeria in District 5, especially near Roosevelt Elementary. There is a strong need for aggressive traffic calming efforts. Speeding in and around the school zone is a huge concern as children there play and commute to and from the school.
This is
something that you're really into.
I am. And so a couple of years ago, I initiated a Vision Zero program. It was supported by my council members and is adopted citywide. I'm very proud to say that San Antonio is one of 20 cities in the country that has a Vision Zero initiative, meaning that we are eliminating fatalities on our roadways. That means people walking, cycling, or using public transit or in private automobiles. And the priority was always around schools, senior centers, parks, and places where we know that we have high walkability. So, you know, so far I got some of the data this morning about where we're trending for fatalities, and it doesn't look positive.
Yeah, I can just look at the paper and tell you that. I mean, it's bad.
It is, and as of January 17, all roadway fatalities increased by 25% is what I show here in the data that I got this morning in preparation for our conversation. And so the Vision Zero initiative came with about $1.5 million, which is very, very little. But we know that in our bond program, we have lots of street improvements and lots of sidewalks and lots of traffic sort of road diets, which is not always a popular term, but a road diet will reduce fatalities because it means that cars are driving slower, and it gives more opportunities for people crossing the street. It includes bike lanes and sidewalks, complete streets altogether will help eliminate fatalities on our roadways. So it's been a huge initiative of mine, specifically because we had so many fatalities specifically in District 5, but it's actually a citywide problem. So we will address the issue around Roosevelt immediately if we haven't already. The school's got first priority.
But Valeria, in her email, continues. She says that she's been working trying to find something to work with the city. She says she's used online District 5 suggestion box to communicate her concerns. She's looking for a speed bump, topes, as we call them, four-way stops, something that would be used in order to slow down the traffic.
Well, those are options, but really a much more comprehensive approach is to reduce lanes. It also would include wider sidewalks. It could include street trees. It could include landscaping. So we have a lot of options. There's probably some standard as to why we can't put speed bumps in that area. I suspect that it has to do with traffic flow. And so since I've been on council, I have not had a single speed bump initiative approved because they don't meet the specific requirements for a speed bump, which is a national standard that they use all over the country to determine whether or not a speed bump is required. So we have to find alternatives, and that could be landscaping, it could be other traffic calming initiatives that we just are not used to seeing as much in San Antonio.
So another email, this is from Lawana. Teenage pregnancy is a silent issue on the west side. And so what plausible action items can you see can be done to try to deal with teenage pregnancies?
Well, thank you very much for that that question, because it'll give me an opportunity to talk about an initiative that I've been working on. It doesn't specifically relate to teen pregnancies, but it relates specifically to child abuse. So we know that teen pregnancy and child abuse are very highly correlated. But I have a task force that I've been working with some of our nonprofits, Family Services Association, Family Violence Prevention, CPS, Judge Sakai I worked with early on, and UTSA, who's helping us do the data collection, to start an initiative that would specifically target child abuse in the 07 zip code. The initiative is a Promotoras program. We'll also be working with WETSI, which is a workforce, Westside Education and Training Center, to create a workforce of community health workers who will go into the communities, specifically in the 07 zip code, and work one-on-one with women who are at risk of child abuse and domestic violence to help with this initiative. And we know that over 30% of all child abuse cases in Bexar County are coming out of two zip codes in our city. That's 07 and 28. And so I live in the 07 zip code. So this issue was of particular importance to me because of the very high numbers of child abuse that are coming out of those two districts. So having an initiative where we're targeting specifically the area, where we're working directly one-on-one with the women who are at risk, and at the same time creating a workforce program where the women who are the promotoras, the social workers, will be trained not as degreed social workers, but as community health workers. And so they'll leave with a certificate and then hopefully go on to become caseworkers at CPS, because we know that they have a shortage of workers in that industry.
One more break, and we'll be coming back with more questions for City Council Member Shirley Gonzalez as we talk about the needs of her district in District 5, Westside District, and all across the city of San Antonio. The number to call in with your questions and comments, 210-614-8980. The Source continues. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. District 5, San Antonio's West Side. It is a historic part of San Antonio, of a vibrant and part of San Antonio. You can say it's our backbone in many ways. Representing that area is Shirley Gonzalez. She is now a part of the old guard with new responsibilities as on the city council, and she has a vision to help her district and the city move forward. If you got a question or a comment, give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. So Shirley Gonzalez, you're now going to be the chair of the Comprehensive Planning Committee. And this is a new amalgamation of other committees that that Mayor has come up with, Nuremberg has come up with. So what are you going to be doing on this Comprehensive Planning Committee?
There are three components of the comprehensive planning, and one is a comprehensive plan, another is transportation, and the final one is sustainability. So when we're briefed in B session, we're often briefed individually on each section of the plan. So what I'm hoping to do is to even break it down a little bit further. One of the criticisms that I had about the comprehensive plan is that it's just too vast. And so it's very hard to really get down and ask specific questions about each plan because they are so dense. So I hope to perhaps take specific pieces of each of the comprehensive plans and dig really deep into those and have the opportunity for the council members to ask specific questions about perhaps parts of the plan that fall into their district, as the comprehensive plan has 13 centers, job centers, that we can really get specific about them. One of my criticisms, of course, of the plan is while it's funded, there's no funding, there's no fiscal note attached to specific parts of the plan. And this is one thing that I would really like to get down into the nitty-gritty, because as council members, I believe our primary responsibility is to approve a budget and to have our city be sustainable for the very long term. So the fact that in these comprehensive plans, there's no funding attached to any of them in terms of how we're going to build these things or how we're going to design these things is, I think, a problem. So I hope that we can break it down even further and hopefully then have better community input, because while I do think the staff did a good job of getting community input, when staff members come to our neighborhood associations or senior centers or just different areas of the city, the constituents don't seem to have any relationship whatsoever to the plan that's being drawn. So I hope to break it down a little bit more piece by piece. And while that may sound a little bit brutal because the plan is so dense, I do think we need to have a better understanding of how this plan is going to affect our lives on a regular basis.
The city council is going to be looking at the animal ordinances pretty soon, animal care ordinances. And one thing people are pretty much all in a feather about is what we're going to do with chickens. Now, they're on the, you know, people are wondering if are we going to be cut back to just two chickens? Is that's what's on the table right now? And then a complete ban on roosters. Is that, where are you on this? Because the West Side, in your area, I mean, it's historically, this is a place where people have enjoyed having their fowl.
Well, we, you know, only recently have I heard about the chickens. Primarily, our concern in the district regarding animal care was around loose animals and loose dogs.
Yeah, the dogs.
That continues to be a problem.
Well, the dog problem can take care of the chicken problem.
Perhaps. I'm just trying to get open dialogue with the community about where they stand on this issue. I have heard that constituents saying that I guess you have to have a rooster.
You don't have to have a rooster to
have
eggs. No, you don't. I'm a chicken guy. I have chickens in my backyard.
Perhaps you can educate me a little more on the chicken issue. My primary focus on animal care has always been loose dogs. We continue to struggle with that issue of the loose dogs, and while it's under control, we're getting it under control. Just this morning, you know, I saw a dog running just a few blocks away from in my area. So my focus has been on that issue regarding loose dogs and stray dogs and still getting that issue under control. And I would love to have a dialogue about chickens and what that means. It just hasn't been the primary focus of my attention with animal care.
Your district, there are many, the zip codes in your district, people are qualified for free spay neuter.
That's right. We qualify for free spay neuter. We also have programs where they'll go into somebody's house and determine how the dogs keep getting out. This is one problem that we have, is that of course dogs want to
the pet roam. Detective
and so it means funding for fence repair. It could mean funding for animal training to help people relate to their pets better, so they have a better relationship with their pets, so that they're more likely to take care of them, and programs along those lines that I think are go beyond the spay-neuter program that is essential. But we know that we need still to do more one-on-one outreach.
All right, Alicia has called in. Alicia, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, Shirley, I actually have a particular issue that seems to be a major factor. It's the dumping and the graffiti, especially along the area of the residential area called Brady Gardens. There seems to be a continuous issue with people dumping. Are you going to address that at any time?
So the dumping and the graffiti, of course, are ongoing and have been an issue in the district for a long time. The city's new policy is that they have to clean up graffiti within 24 hours of notification. So we encourage everybody to, first of all, use the app and to call in anytime that they see graffiti. And the same is true with the dumping. I think there's a 3-day turnaround for illegal dumping, but primarily we need for people to report them. We need a better and a stronger initiative with private property owners, because one of the things that we're seeing, not just with dumping and graffiti, but also with loitering, is people not protecting their private property. And so, for example, there's an auto zone where I live off of Sarsamora and Commerce, and there's a bunch of people that hang out in the back of that behind the building, and they dump and they create a lot of trash, and they also loiter there. So getting that property owner to secure their property so that we can eliminate some of those issues are one thing that we need to do a better job of reaching out to our private businesses. And even regarding the graffiti, we have a couple of graffiti wipeouts every year. That's not something that we is going to help with the daily maintenance, but we do have a 24-hour turnaround. So I encourage everybody to continue to call in immediately as soon as they see the graffiti.
Chip is on the line. Chip, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. My question is this. Despite what the state is trying to do, are you willing to fight for a tree preservation and tree canopy ordinance for the city? Thank you, and I'll take my answer off the line.
Thanks, Chip.
It's so important to protect our tree canopies. We talk a lot about the area around Camp Bolas for our military protection, but we also know that in our urban areas, we need more street trees, and we need more shade in order to create a more beautiful walking environment, but also to help with the heat effect of a more dense population. So while I'm very supportive of continuing with the tree ordinance, I think we still need to do a better job of planting in urban areas and conserving our plants in urban areas. In my district, we know that at one time it was a lot of farmland, and so we have soil that would lend itself to
You have great soil.
We do, and you know, you see orange trees and lemon trees and
all over.
And so if we can continue to encourage people to preserve the trees that they already have on their private property, because private property was never a consideration of the state legislation, but encouraging people to try to maintain their street trees and then asking for more. I have a great vision of having tree-lined streets along all of our major corridors, and I hope to help make that happen with this bond money that we got that will improve some of our corridors.
So isn't there a program, Grow Over Graffiti, where there are tree giveaways encouraging people to plant more trees?
There are, and hopefully we can continue on that program, but I think there does need to be a little bit of education along with them as well. So hopefully that's being done along with the tree giveaways.
And so what you talked about, all of the great assets that District 5 has, you know, and I think one of them that you left out was just the community, just the people who a lot of people that have been there for generations. They know each other. They know the families. It's an incredible social fabric that District 5 has.
Well, I hope I didn't leave that out. That's the number one thing that I talk about.
Well, let's highlight it.
In the community, and having people that can tell you their history about how the community has changed or has not changed over the years, what they loved about living in the area when they were children, and how they would like to see some revival on that.
And how they look after each other.
That's exactly right. I live in a neighborhood where I often get calls saying, hey, there's somebody in your that's walking in behind your house, or having a better network of how we communicate with each other is one thing that I think we could improve on. But our neighbors, we look out for each other. And it's one of the reasons why I have initiated a crime task force, because people are often reporting crime that they see in the neighborhood, but we need a better way to tackle those individual locations that are putting a strain on our older neighborhoods, and especially with our older residents, because they want to feel safe in their neighborhoods just like everybody else.
Yeah, so talk about how you're dealing with the police chief and encouraging more activity with the police officers on the street?
Well, the Chief McManus initiated a violent crimes task force where he's going after individuals who have histories of violent crimes. And while that makes for very dangerous work for our police officers, I think we saw that with Officer Moreno and his fatalities. They were going after people who were dangerous in the neighborhood. That particular initiative has been really important for old neighborhoods like ours who see a rise in crime and especially a rise in drug activity in their neighborhoods, to be able to specifically target households where we know that they're doing illegal activity has been a really important change. And the chief has been very deliberate about that in my district. And so we have a task force that we're working on to ask individuals to please report crimes.
And making District 5 safer for the residents there. Shirley Gonzalez, you represent District 5. I thank you so much for joining us this afternoon on The Source. It's been fun. And this is I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning us in.